my ridiculously huge screen is it's touch, and I don't know why, because I'd never want to be that close to it.
Yeah, and you use it to watch things on, I imagine. You probably don't want your screen smudged.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to clean because it is that kind of surface as well, but...
Yeah. Still seems weird.
Not really. I think old people are just having a hard time because they're old, personally.
Are you calling me old?
Yes, I am calling you personally old.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree from the coastal cool city of Portland, Oregon. You are Richard Wally.
From the warm, sunny place of Orange County is Cassidy Robinson. Is that what I had to do right then? I'm not like, I don't know. I feel like I'm doing weather, not a podcast about film. What's happening here?
That's okay.
In the Burbank Studios, we have Cassidy Robinson. Like, should I do it in my announcer voice? Is that what we should do?
Sure. Oh. I think you should do everything in the announcer voice.
No, I don't think I should. I'd get annoyed of myself really quick.
Before we hit record, you were talking about these new trailers that are coming out. And you seem very opinionated about it, so I figured I'll give you the top of the show to express your opinions.
Oh, I just find that the new Hercules movies are very... There's several of them coming out, and they all look like crap, and I'm kind of excited, but kind of not at all at the same time.
There's more than one?
Yeah. There's the most recent trailer that came out has, like, Kellan Lutz is his name. He was in... the only thing I know was Twilight, basically.
Okay.
And he's Hercules. And then there's one that's coming out with The Rock. But that one will probably be entertaining just because The Rock's in it. So.
Yeah.
And he'll probably fight Vin Diesel at some point in it. I don't know if he's in the film. He'll just, like, bust in through, like, the backdrop and they'll just start fighting.
In, like, a regular white wife beater and jeans.
Yeah. That's a Brett Ratner movie as well.
I want that to happen. Oh, well, maybe not then.
So, yeah, no, I find them... I find it curiously funny. I don't think they'll be good movies, so I'm surprised you brought it up. I thought you'd seen them.
No, I haven't. I've heard about them. I heard about the infamously bad RoboCop trailer, like, way before I actually saw it. And now I'm hearing about these way before I actually see it. I mostly see trailers in the theater. I don't watch many trailers online.
Oh.
So if they don't pop up, you know, naturally, then I generally don't see them.
I see bad ones online a lot more. Like, movies I'm actually interested in, I don't look at. Like, movies I'm, like, interested, like, in, like, this is going to be a piece of shit. I look at them. So...
So, in keeping with your horror month, you've been watching a lot of horror movies at home with your wife and friends.
True.
Do you want to catch us up? What have you seen?
We watched Haxan the other day.
Haxan?
Haxan!
Is that how they say it?
It's German.
Or is that just how you say it?
That's how I say it in my strange German Nazi accent. it's one of the first... Basically, this guy wanted to make, I don't know, he was somewhere between a documentary and is in the 1920s, so it was kind of part of the German expression movie. It didn't really have that kind of feel about it necessarily, but well, it did, but it didn't. But no, it was strange, you know. There was almost nude women in it. That was another 1920s thing. I was like, this is interesting. But no, it talked a lot about the devil, and it was a silent film, and it had some creepy moments, and it had some kind of like cheesy moments, and it was, I don't know, it was interesting. Yeah. What else have we been seeing? We've been seeing some Dario Argento stuff. We saw Deep Red on 35mm print. That was pretty. That was pretty fun. With the super.
Yeah, you went to that last week right after we recorded.
Yeah, I did.
How was that?
It was pretty good. I think I need to see a cleaned up version. The 35mm was a bit damaged here and there, but I mean overall it was pretty good still. We also saw Opera last week. It was good. That was really good.
You projected or at home?
At home.
But you enjoyed it?
Yeah, and then for our double feature night, let's see, we watched a lovely Spanish grindhouse from the 80s slasher movie called Pieces. Some friends brought that over, and it was...
I've heard of it, yeah.
It's rather delightful in a bad way. So if you need a good bad movie, that's... That's fucking there, yeah, man. Yeah. It's good. It's good. And then after that, we watched Maniac, and that one wasn't as... Even though it was a little cheesy, it was kind of effective in some parts.
Yeah. Is it the new Maniac or the old Maniac? Because they just remade
the original.
Okay, yeah. That's like a full-blown cult classic. Like, that's like...
Yeah.
Some people live and die by that movie.
Well, it was in that awkward... I don't know if it was awkward, really. Yeah, it was awkward because I was coming about sexually too, so it was a bad time in my life. But when I watched when I watched all those horror movies when I was like 12, 13.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of those slasher ones that just all blend into this big homogenous slasher movie.
And I want to say that the director of Maniac like did legitimate movies later.
Well, somebody was saying, and he was like, oh, he did the Maniac Cop movies, and I was like, I've never fucking seen them. Well, I saw them on TV when I was a kid, but as an adult, I basically haven't seen them. So I can't really comment on that. But, yeah, we've been watching random crap and, you know, whatever comes up. Fun times had by all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm looking. He pretty much just did Maniac Cop movies.
See?
But yeah, that is kind of considered something of a slasher classic now. I've never seen it.
It's good stuff. It also has... Tom Savini's not only in it. That was one of the first ones where he was like, I'm going to show up my makeup stuff. And, yeah.
He was pretty much the preeminent gore guy of the 80s for every horror director.
Yeah.
Like, it was between him and Rick Baker and a few others.
Greg Nicotero and...
Yeah.
That other Spanish guy. That Spanish-Canadian guy.
Well, we might as well get started and talk about our movie news. What do you have for us?
So, in part two of discussing what's going to be happening with Edgar Wright's Ant-Man, because I love Edgar Wright and I love me some Marvel, so might as well get that out of the way. The newest rumor... for the Ant-Man movie is that Rashida Jones will be playing the Wasp. Now this actually, to me, I'm actually fairly stoked for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not only attracted to her, I find her appealing as an actress as well.
That's a double whammy.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. Now, is this for the Ant-Man movie, not for the Avengers movie, or probably both?
Maybe both. No, she'll because... Ant-Man's coming in the third, phase three, part 7, 8, duplex, whatever Marvel wants to call it now. In their anthology series of Marvel movies.
Yeah.
So it'll be coming after the next Avengers movie. So we might see a sneak peek, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure she'll pop up somewhere before she gets her own flick or whatever.
Well, she'll be in the Ant-Man movie. I don't know.
Yeah. She might be in Avengers. Who knows? I enjoy Rashida Jones, and I think she's as good a choice as any. We've never seen her in an action film, so that'll be, we'll see what that's like. But she already proves to have chemistry with Paul Rudd. They've been in more than one movie together, most specifically playing a very believable couple in I Love You, Man. But he wasn't beating her in that movie.
I'm excited for part two of I Love You, Man, where he beats her. I think that's going to be a very intriguing lead-in. No, I think that it works, and she could bring out, you know, some of the and I know that they're doing the Ant-Man as like it is an action comedy. I know I know Edgar Wright's going more action than he's going comedy,
yeah,
as opposed to the other way around normally. I think it makes sense with, you know, getting, you know, comedic actors for this kind of thing,
and yeah,
not going super gritty, serious with an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
Because that could be that to me is actually the mistake, not going this direction.
Getting anyway. like a Christian Bale or a Benedict Cumberbatch's Ant-Man.
Oh, I thought you were going to say as a Wasp, and I was like, yeah, that would work too, I guess. That'd be funny, you know.
Sean Bean.
Yes. Well, what news do you got for us, Cassidy Robinson?
There's this kind of funny story that came out a little while ago that I kind of wanted to talk about, I guess. Michael Bay was attacked on the set of the newest Transformers film, Transformers Age of Extinction. He was doing some location shooting in Hong Kong, and he had to close down some streets, and some local vendors were getting really frustrated, even though they were being paid by the studio for their inconvenience. They were trying to extort more money out of the set, so they kind of they went and started throwing things and tried to attack Michael Bay himself, with various items from their store, you know, screaming that they wanted more money, and eventually they had to be escorted off.
I just imagine a very old Chinese man doing it. I don't know why, but it's just Mr. Miyagi like attacking Michael Bay.
Sure, and he has like a butcher's apron on and a half of a fish in one hand and a cleaver in the other.
But he has, like, Hulk strength, and he's, like, throwing, like, cop cars and stuff like that.
Because it's a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's really stylized. There's some busty Chinese women in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much as far as how much you want to editorialize on this.
But... It's not a real news article. You just like the fact that Michael Bay got attacked. Just say it.
Not really. I mean... This could have happened to anybody. It's okay, not
so
really...
your second pet topic comes out of it, then.
Which is... No.
The Chinese. That's the second pet topic here.
Do you want me just to go into it?
Yeah, just go into it.
Okay.
Let's get the rage.
I'm not racist, by the way, listeners.
He is.
I'm not. But I'm reading this very interesting book right now called Sleepless in Hollywood, which deals all with the new abnormal, as the author Linda Obst calls it, and how Hollywood is changing drastically into becoming a more worldwide market. And one of the biggest contributors to this is the expansion of the Chinese market, which we've talked about, you know, a little bit. But before I read the book, I had no idea how pervasive this business model was and how really it is going to change the mainstream film market completely. And then as I'm reading this book and I'm thinking about these things, I see this article pop up. It says that Chinese box office set for more explosive growth, and I guess by between 10 to 15 years, the Chinese market will actually double the U.S. box office if things keep going the way they're going. So, and that's talking about not just American films, which we exhibit in China and other countries, but specifically the Chinese film market, how much money they'll make over there, even for their own films, will double the rates of Hollywood. So... Not only are we no longer the world hegemon politically, but even in the entertainment media, we're being taken over.
Well, I just saw an article. This is akin to that, but Natalie Portman was just talking about London being the place where they film movies now, you know, it's famous Pinewood Studio and stuff like that. So, I don't know. It makes sense to me. Everything's so fucking expensive, you know, compared to probably other countries.
In China or in general?
In general. I don't know. I'm kind of half and half about it. Like, with the Chinese, specifically the Chinese market, you know a lot more about that than I do. I just find it funny, and I feel like you're a 1950s like McCarthy. Like, I hear it in that voice when you tell me. I know that you're not saying that, and he's actually, I'll admit on the air, that you're not a racist, except to Chinese people. No, I'm kidding, I'm sorry.
But the business model that we've created with China, I think, you know, we jumped on to expanding the foreign markets as a way of, you know, just finding the quickest life raft after the DVD market dropped. Or at least this is the argument that Lynn Oakes outlines in her book. And it seems fairly legitimate. She's a Hollywood producer who has to deal with these things firsthand. And now we've basically signed on for this model that is squeezing out more and more originality out of American pictures, mainstream American pictures. Anything that's basically made over, you know, 60, 70 million now has to appeal on a much broader range than it did even 10 years ago.
Yeah. Which I don't think is necessarily, doesn't necessarily make it a bad film. I think that you can tap into a larger, like, universal message. However, it doesn't make it, specific and unique and a lot of those other things.
It limits what kind of stories you can tell. And also, I think even more specifically, it increases things that Americans are already sick of, things like, sequelitis, where we're, you know, the reason we keep having Ice Age movies about every 5 years or every 2 years is that, Americans are basically done with the Ice Age movies. They're not making nearly as much money as they used to, but they're actually increasing in profits in China. So, regardless, we're going to get Ice Age movies, even if we don't want to see them.
Well, gotta be, I guess it has to be popular somewhere for them to be coming out in such success. I don't know. It's interesting to hear, and it's interesting to see. Kind of, we'll have to keep our eye out and see what keeps happening.
I actually think that this will cause the market to splinter even more than it already has, and I feel like basically good directors artistic directors are going to flee Hollywood in bigger droves. And we'll see the rise of the independent movement in a big way. And it'll become a whole competitive, strictly American market.
That's what I was hoping for, like, honestly. But, I mean, we'll see. Maybe we'll just be brain drones.
Maybe.
Or maybe we'll... the one flesh.
And we'll only watch, Cars 5 and Ice Age 16.
Well, I am excited for the rest of eternity.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
What was your other news item?
My other news item was those fellows that brought us that helped do the Star Trek movies and stuff like that, Robert Borky and Alex Kurtzman. They're currently trying to kind of basically get like the Universal Monster movies to bring in a new heyday of those. Basically, they're almost making like a cinematic universe, and they want characters like Van Helsing and other things like that. Not the original movie, a new one that they want to kind of reboot and do better, I hope. I as a big Universal Monster fan, those movies are old enough that I think that you can go to those materials and use them. Just don't think it's been done in a creative or... Well, I don't think it's been done well. Maybe creative. I guess fucking vampire, demon, alien eggs is pretty fucking creative, but rather retarded in its production. But no, I'd like to see it kind of be taken on seriously and not be screwed over by them, or by the studio in general. And I'd like to see kind of a new, another heyday for, you know, because I, as a big horror fan too, I appreciate slashers, but I also, you know, I appreciate the ghost stories. I just don't like seeing all of one kind of movie.
Yeah.
And so,
but I don't think they're talking about a horror franchise. So what it sounds like to me mm-hmm. is they want to try and create the lightning in a bottle that is the Marvel Studios model, where you have, you know, all these different properties and then that exist in the same universe, and they can kind of, characters can weave in and out of each other. I think mm-hmm. that's what they're trying to set up. And if that's what they're trying to set up, then this actually really goes back to my article. I think this is going to be, this is going to be more kind of tentpole style stuff. I think it's going to be probably stylistically a little bit closer to Joe Johnston's werewolf movie or Wolfman movie.
I thought that the headline for this article was a little leading, and the actual things what they said, like, I didn't think that it was as leading towards that. It just mostly said that they were, they're trying to remake them and be true to the characters, but still kind of do it in a more fresh and, I guess, newer sensibility, which might be just shitty. I'm not really sure. Maybe that's what they mean for the Chinese market by modernize it. But no, I don't know. I mean, I can only hope for it. And like I said, this has been something that I've actually kind of wanted for a long time.
Yeah.
See, if you go specifically, I'm glad you kind of brought up the Joe Johnston one, because that one, if it wasn't so dour, there were things about that movie that I actually liked quite a bit, but it was just so dour, and they kind of, in the acting, and there was, you know, it was just kind of dull. But I mean, the production of it and everything like that was actually, you know, and the look of the film wasn't bad. So I think that there's real possibilities for monster, you know, these old Universal classic monsters still. I just don't think that they're being utilized. And so we'll see. It could be, you know, them teaming up and doing these weird Abbott and Costello kind of meets Frankenstein kind of movies. Except it'll be like what Will Ferrell meets the Frankenstein. It'll be like Step Brothers with Frankenstein in it.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened, honestly.
Yeah,
we'll see. I don't know. I hope that it's, you know, they really want to make horror movies out of these things, because it'd be great to see, you know, these characters done in a way that's scary again, because monsters have kind of
this is kind of going to my own, like, little pet project, but I don't think that scary movies necessarily need to, or horror movies, excuse me, need to be scary. What I think they need to do is just invoke the darker side of, like, human nature and stuff like that, at least. I think horror movies can be more than just scary movies. And when people go to a horror movie and they're like, I wasn't scared. Well, was it still a good movie? Well, it just didn't scare me. Well, it doesn't always have to be, like, a ride movie. I'm not speaking to you in general. I'm just saying.
No, that's my. I know what you're saying. And comedies don't have to be, you know, spill milk out of your nostrils funny either every single time. There's different kinds of comedy. There's different kinds of drama. I get all that. But I'm saying personally, if they're going to, you know, go through the motions of getting all these characters on the screen again, they're really going to have to do it in a way that revitalizes a character. And just doing another, you know, gothic horror film with a lot of cool set deck and that kind of stuff, I just don't think that's going to be enough to be worth doing it.
I think you're right. I think they do. I don't know. I'm half and half about that. I will say I don't necessarily want to see them like, you know, like a torture porn Dracula or mummy movie. Maybe I do. I think
I might do. I think you've nailed it.
Yeah, modernizing the making it torture porn. Gotcha.
Okay, well, that goes really segues well into our next segment. It's your turn for the pet topic, and you already kind of gave me a tip to what it was, but why don't you tell our listeners?
So I kind of want to, because I am neck deep in overboard land with horror movies right now, I kind of wanted to know what some of your favorite death scenes were. It can be horror. I mean, I'm mostly thinking the horror genre, but it can be other genres. I don't care. As long as they're good. If they're bad, I'll boo you off the show. But
sure. So. I'll start off with one, and then I'll let you talk a little bit while I think of more.
Okay.
The one that immediately comes to mind, it's one of my favorites, is from Jaws. The scene specifically with the boy on the raft. Because up to that point, the movie's really kind of... I mean, there's a little bit of viscera. You see, like, the girl's body wash up shore and that kind of stuff. But it's kind of, like, playing it pretty safe. Or not even safe, but just really kind of keeping its cards to its chest as far as the horror element goes. And you're still getting to know the characters and stuff. And it takes a while, really, for it to get to really scary stuff. But that scene in particular is, like... Whoa, and I don't even know if you'd see it in a PG-13 movie now, or PG as it was back then, but the scene where he's on the raft, and then you still don't even see the shark, really, you see its fins kind of flipped when he thrashes that raft about, and you see this big fountain of gore just spring up from the ocean, and everybody kind of, like, quickly moves away from it, and then, it pans to Brody's face and does that cool Hitchcockian zoom. Mm. Like, that whole sequence is one of my favorites. Specifically because it's such a marker in the film of, shit just got real.
Yeah. I also, because we're talking about that film and I have to, I also really like Quinn's death.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know this badass shark man. He's fucking nothing compared to Jaws.
Well, it's the Moby Dick moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Moby Dick moment too. But to me, with just in the movie, even if you take away the whole, the comparisons to that, you really get that whole. Just his character. He tells all these stories. He's degrading to these other guys.
Yeah.
And he just. Is useless compared to the pure brutality of that shark. So,
yeah.
Well, one of my favorites is from is actually I've been thinking about this movie a lot because I started out my horror month with it. Is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Okay.
It's one of my favorite films, and why I and a lot of people give it crap, and they're like, oh, and they kind of tie it in with slashers. It's not a slasher movie.
No, not really.
It's maybe you could call it a proto slasher movie.
An antecedent.
Yes, definitely. But I think it has more ties to things like Psycho and PB Tom and things like that. I really do.
Yeah.
Anyway, my favorite death scene, it's almost a similar vibe, is what happens is, he just walks into the house, it's a little, weird, big metal door or whatever. One hammer strike, those kicking feet on, the spasms on the ground, and then he's pulled in, door shuts, and you're done,
So you're talking about the first kill of the movie.
That first kill of the movie, I think, is one of the most satisfying because it sets a tone. I mean, it really, people are talking about, like, well, he's spasming. No, it's really realistic. They, making that scene, they wanted to make it so realistic.
Mm-hmm.
That, it's more shocking that way to me. They didn't, have to have his brain splatter everywhere. And like some of the remakes, you see those and they're very gory and very visceral and kind of goes, but it doesn't leave you with that same just sudden boom, boom, slam.
And again, like the Jaws scene, there's a lot of lead up to that point.
Yeah.
And you're kind of wondering, especially if you've never seen the movie before, you're kind of wondering, when's the movie going to start? Like, you get the creepy guy in the car, kind of, but that's sort of whatever. And then the movie really slows down for a while before that point, and then bam. Yeah.
Well, you get one of those classic, like, horror movie setups where it's like something really bad happens in the start or something weird. And you get that with, the weird imagery, too, with, the cross coming out and the skeleton. I just watched it on Blu-ray, and it was actually a very, very good cleanup effort.
Oh, that movie is gorgeously shot. Not enough people actually call out the cinematography enough in that movie. It is not... I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why it's kind of held up above most exploitation films of that time, is because it looks so great. And, they knew what they were doing.
No, and they did some great things. Like, also, like, I mean, you talk about the slow build-up, but... Even with that slow buildup, every little moment is almost pointing towards something bad. From the stuff on the radio, to them talking about astrology, to, them talking about head cheese or whatever,
So the whole thing is very, unsettling.
Yeah. So all of that, just pointing up to that moment, that pivotal, like that first death to me, is very. And so I think that death scene in a horror movie is fucking fantastic.
All right. The next one I can think of at the moment is. I don't know how many deaths in this is. It's probably a few, and there's a few really good ones in this movie. But I'm thinking specifically of the barbed wire scene in Suspiria.
Okay.
I remember seeing that scene, and you know, Suspiria is a very strange movie. All Dario Argento. You were just talking about him earlier. All Dario Argento movies are. Weird. They're kind of otherworldly. The score is really overwhelming, and they kind of have a dreamlike, unreal sort of melodramatic effect. And that scene in particular comes, I think, towards the middle of the end of the movie. And everything you see up to that point is kind of playing into this big, stagey sort of broad horror fantasy stuff, but that scene in particular, I remember seeing that the first time a few years ago and thinking, oh man, you know, I'm sure the Saw guys were really inspired by this movie.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of these kind of crazy contraption-y sort of Rube Goldberg device like murder set pieces in that movie. And they're all of them are a lot of fun to watch just to see their functionality. But that one in particular is really brutal and really kind of stands out in that movie as like, ugh, like it's kind of hard to watch.
Well, it's sort of strange too, because I don't think it would, because I mean, okay, so you're in this ballerina school, right? And I mean, normally for a person to jump through a window into a fucking like barbed wire pit is really fucking asinine. Like if you think about it. However, the movie sets up how Dario Argento himself uses his sets and uses his atmosphere. You're lured into the moment and you feel at least somewhat. For me that scene, I agree with you. I just recently watched it with Jackie though, and Jackie was like, "A barbed wire room? What the hell?" And I was like. you're right. But for me, just getting in, you know, just getting wrapped up in the movie, I was just more like, oh, surprised by it almost. So.
Yeah. Well, it's especially vicious because, she's tricked into doing it herself. She's not like pushed into a barbed wire room. She thinks she's escaping, and then bam.
Well, you as the audience think she's escaping.
Yeah. So I mean, it plays on that expectation too, which again makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looks gorgeous. I mean, the whole movie is shot like a painting. It's you know, so even when people are being eviscerated in front of you, it's all kind of, it's weirdly pretty.
Yeah. Well, no, again, I think that you need to, I highly recommend Opera to you. There's some really great stuff in that one. Well, okay, this is the other one. It always kind of pissed me off as a kid, but I appreciate it now, is the one in Predator.
Which one? I know which one it is, but
go ahead. No. I was just about to explain it. So there's, I forgot his name, but he's the badass, like almost Rambo one. He's like this Native American. He has his big knife, and the whole time, like everybody, like all the other characters besides maybe Arnold, are a little bit wary of him, a little bit like almost maybe afraid of him. And then, you know, he goes and they finally figure out that something's following them, and he's like, "You guys go ahead, and you think you're gonna get this like badass scene." And he walks up with his big knife, and all you get from it is screaming in the distance. That is a beautiful, beautiful scene. Really, even though as a kid, it always pissed me off because I was like, "Gosh damn it! I thought I was gonna see these two fight." But as an adult, and putting the kid in me in back in his little box, I think that is a really good setup. So.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. This one I love, and we'll finish the segment on this, and then we'll move on to the next to our reviews.
Sure.
I really love the prison escape scene from Silence of the Lambs. There's two great scenes or sequences in that film that are, you know, like, in and of themselves are these great little kind of set-piece montage-y movies within the movie. And one is that, the scene where Hannibal Lecter escapes from the big bird cage in the middle of the gymnasium and how he goes about doing that. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is later in the film where they're cross-cutting between the two houses. And how that concludes. But going back to the birdcage, I love everything about that sequence. From, you know, from the moment when the guards come in to bring Hannibal Lecter his meal, to the end of the sequence where, you know, you see the big reveal when he pulls off the guard's skin from his face in the ambulance. Just that is like masterclass, intense, beautiful filmmaking from start to finish.
It's a really good buildup. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of strange because, like, even though the actual killings, when you see them, they're very visceral, but they're almost art-like, the framing in it, it's very strange. But basically what makes some of those parts of the movie is just the edit. You're right.
Yeah, it's an amazingly edited film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazingly everything film, but that specifically for those sequences, the editing is really what is key.
Sure.
And it implies much more gore than you actually see, which is always impressive. There is that scene when the SWAT team opens that door and you see that guard just butterflied out and tied to the cage with the American flag banners. And it's, you know, up to that point, if you were like, would I call this a horror film? I don't know. Like, at that point, you're like, okay, yeah, it just went full on.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the stuff in the, you know, the basement, him falling.
Oh, yeah.
That's almost like Ghost House kind of way. Mm-hmm.
But, well, even the scene, the interrogation scenes, is very gothic horror. So
yeah,
but yeah.
Well, the basement too, you know. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Agreed.
All right, cool. Well, we'll start now with our review of the remake of Carrie, and IMDb is fucking me right now because everything on the Carrie page is in red and gray, which is not an easy color to read. But this remake is directed by Kimberly Pierce, who previously is kind of an indie director. She did the Academy Award nominated, and I believe Hilary Swank won Best Actress for Boys Don't Cry back in the late 90s. And she did a film with Joseph Gordon-Levitt a long time ago called Stop Loss. She's kind of been toiling away in TV land, but she gets to take on the big remake, the big horror remake, with Stephen King's Carrie, which was previously directed by Brian De Palma back in the 70s. And this one stars Chloe Grace Moretz as the lead character and Julianne Moore playing her mother. And, you know, if you've seen the original, then you've seen this one. Basically, you know, it doesn't stray too far from the Stephen King story of, you know, a girl who's bullied at school and isn't really well liked and has no self-esteem. Her mother is completely insane, kind of a religious zealot who resents Carrie's existence because it reminds her of her ex-husband, amongst other things. And she takes out her religious craziness on her. So not only is she being bullied at school, she's being bullied at home. Carrie is coming into her own as a woman in her senior year, and she has her first menstrual cycle, which in the girls' shower in gym, and doesn't know what it is because her mother never told her, which leads into this big elaborate prank that they all decide to play on her, where she ends up going a little crazy at the prom as she is also coming into her own as a woman. She is coming into her own in a new way. She is discovered early on in the film that she has special powers, telekinetic powers. She can move things. What did you think of Kimberly Pierce's Carrie?
Okay, so I mean, this is one of those movies where I knew right away that I was going to be biased, and mm-hmm. it wasn't, and there was no way for me
to not be.
So yeah. I went in with that mindset. I'm a big fan of the Brian De Palma one, the original one, and I've seen it a lot since I was young. Mm-hmm. And honestly, while watching it, I actually don't think that this is a poorly crafted one. I think that some of the stuff she does in it is, I think some of the modernization she did is actually quite interesting. I like the YouTube stuff.
The cyberbullying aspect.
Yes, because that is something that...
It's a thing, yeah.
No, it is a thing, and it should be addressed in films. To me, this really did kind of exploit a little bit of the cyberbullying plus the mass killing kind of idea that we have in our zeitgeist in these days. And I think that it does do that fairly well, and I think for a new generation that it is really good. That being said, I have a hard time being from, you know, growing up with basically the original Brian De Palma and separating it, because you really can't. I mean, I was thinking about this, and you really can't separate the pig's blood. I actually thought that scene was edited poorly personally.
What do you mean?
I didn't like the cut shots and them dumping it on her head like three times. I thought that was silly.
Okay.
So I'm kind of getting into some of my nicks towards the movie now.
Sure.
Cause I wanted to be kind of, cause I'm actually not very negative about it, but I needed to be upfront about my biases towards it.
Fair.
Specifically, I think another like little nick I'll give to it, I think Julianne Moore does a decent job for most of the film, but there are parts where that some of her overacting tendencies I feel mm-hmm. come out. And I feel like she tries to outdo the original performance, and I don't think that it works. However, I it's a mixed bag, because I also think that some of the repressed Bible stuff I think is interesting. I think they play that out well. The other thing is the guy that the boyfriend to the lead bully. I can't find, and he has such a generic bad guy face.
The one who was originally played by Travolta. Yeah,
by Travolta, yes.
Yeah.
I thought he was so generic, and I didn't really care for him. But there was a handful of that was good and bad. Like, so I don't know. It's hard too, because this film to me can almost be like a. This is almost like a fairy tale. And I think it can go from generation to generation, because I think that, you know, each generation needs that kind of like the. What is that term? The cautionary tale. About bullying, and I think that this does that well, but I don't know for me if it deviated enough from the original, but I don't. At the same time, I'm kind of like, I don't know if it needed to. However, at the same time, I don't know. There were just parts, and so I have mixed feelings towards it. I'm still placing some of them. I would, in general, though, I think I would in general recommend it though.
Okay, all right. I hated this movie.
I kind of figured you would.
From start to finish, pretty much. With very little for me to keep me interested. I did like the cyberbullying aspect. I thought that should have been explored more. I thought that rather than just kind of including it peripherally, it should have been played into the story more. I feel like they took the Brian De Palma script and then added a new page, you know, about every fifth page.
Sure.
Of just random exposition that doesn't really do much either way. I feel like none of the performances hold up to the original, and that's really the key thing to the Brian De Palma film. I mean, it's you know, it's done in that crazy, wacky, aggressive Brian De Palma style, and that's a big part of what that movie is, and I'm okay with divorcing this story from that style, but mm-hmm. not if you're not going to make up for it somewhere else, and I don't think it does. I think that this movie pretty much has no style. It really feels, I don't even feel like it feels like a Kimberly Pierce movie. It feels like nothing. It feels like blah. It actually feels a little bit like a TV movie, and there has been a TV movie remake of this not that long ago.
Yeah. Maybe that's also my separation, because I didn't see that very long ago. And so, for me, maybe that did separate it, because if you watch that, I wouldn't say you would say this is as blasé. Because that one is really, truly fucking everything you're saying.
Well, I still think it's here. Okay, so Julianne Moore is basically, you know, trying to do her version of the Piper Laurie performance, and it's funny that you say that she overacts, because I feel like she really kind of undersells this character a lot. I feel like she, her line readings, because some of the dialogue is exactly the same. Like, I was, like, mouthing the words as the actors were saying it.
Sure.
Because I know that movie that well.
Well, no, I knew. I'm a fan of it, but I think you're... I mean, I know that you appreciate it more than I do. I'm not saying that I don't appreciate the original Brian De Palma one, but I know that you appreciate it more. So I honestly think you were going to hate this one.
No, yeah.
But I can fully say I know that some of it is bias. Because I think you do have to look at a film from the standpoint that, well, what is it saying to a newer generation? And this one, I think, is far enough away from the original one.
I do not.
Okay.
I think it's exactly the same. I think it hits all the beats. It hits them even in the same place in the movie. And then it's almost like watching the Psycho remake, or like the weird Vanilla Sky remake of Open Your Eyes. It's like they know the words, but they can't sing the tune. Nothing here, I don't think, feels like it's doing what the original did, or even what I think the story is supposed to do. It's not scary or dramatic where it's supposed to be scary or dramatic. It's not sad when it's supposed to be sad. I don't buy Chloe Grace Moretz as this character at all.
That was one of my criticisms of it. I will say that I felt she was too confident for it. I don't think that she necessarily... I don't think she has to be as ugly as... just to say it bluntly...
As unconventionally attractive as...
I don't know. I'm just going to say it bluntly. I mean, no, they played her in the other one as very ugly.
As Sissy Spacek?
Sissy Spacek. That's a hard name to say really fast. I don't think that she had to be, but there was this kind of weird confidence to Chloe Grace Moretz.
Moretz,
yeah, excuse me.
It's a confident,
I didn't think she was as poor as you said, though. I really don't think so. I think that you're a little overinflated in your hatred, but that's,
I know that I resent this movie more because I'm a fan of the original, but I really do think this movie fails all over the place. I don't think it's a good movie. Despite the fact that I don't think it's a very good remake of an already good movie, I don't think it's a very good movie in and of itself, because it's not doing any of the things it's supposed to be doing.
A lot of the stuff you said before, you were directly comparing.
Well, I am, because I think it's interesting to see how one is doing, hitting a beat, and the other is not. It's like, you have to compare the two in that way, because it's failing at the same setups. But at the theater screening that I went to, it was full of teenagers who were under 15 years old who have surely not seen the original movie, or I can assume probably have not. And during a lot of the scenes that were supposed to be really heartbreaking or sad or intense, sure, I was hearing giggles, and not just a few, like, pretty much sporadically all throughout the theater. There's a lot of places in this movie I don't think works like it thinks it's supposed to be working. One key scene, and it's a little spoilery, but if you haven't seen the original, oh well. there's a scene at the end where Carrie comes home after the big prom sequence, and which that whole scene is just totally fucked, but going into it's my favorite segment of the original film is when she comes home and she comes out of her crazy fugue state and she realizes what she's done and what's happened and the tragedy of it all, and then she's later betrayed by her mother. It's even more tragic than the prom scene. And they decide, for I don't know what reason, to completely destroy the intimacy that that scene is supposed to be by bringing in a secondary character out of nowhere.
Oh, and, yeah, okay. I see.
And it just killed that scene completely. And I feel like there's an equivalent of that in practically every scene. I mean, the idea of having Kimberly Pierce do Carrie is an interesting idea, even if I resent a remake being made in the first place. But if you're going to have somebody do it, the girl who did Boys Don't Cry, which almost has the exact same structure as Carrie, you know, it's about a girl who is hiding something for the majority of the film, and we all know it's going to inevitably lead to something bad. And, you know, a violent ending. The idea of that, but I feel like that she doesn't even bring what she brought to that movie, to this movie. It's just going by the numbers. It's like, okay, do we have to do the scene now with the gym teacher? Okay, let's do the gym teacher scene. And the whole thing to me just feels cynically made and boring. I was bored through most of it. Bored partly because they don't deviate enough for me to already know everything that's going to happen. And when they do, it's just random, strange, tiny little things. And bored because it doesn't have the same power or weight or interest of the original.
Okay. I don't completely disagree with you, but I don't completely agree. It's a mixed bag for me. I don't think that it's necessarily a, like, complete triumph. But the reason, somebody who hasn't seen the original, somebody from that generation, would they go see it and enjoy it? I think that they would. So I don't know. I'm kind of half and half about it.
I don't. To me, this feels like an episode of something like Dawson's Creek or... You know what I mean?
I can't disagree with you. I don't think that the other half of the cast, the younger cast, I don't think I don't think that Moretz is necessarily, I don't think she does that bad of a job, but I do think that some of the other ones are a little either saccharine or they're just, I didn't really care for the bully. I really liked that thread in the original one. But this is my problem, is all of those things end up getting held up to the original one, and I do feel like that's a problem as a reviewer. So I don't know. So for me, it depends. I can give it a
halfway positive review.
I can say that there are some good stuff in it, but I think it's a mixed bag, and it would depend on who I was talking to. If I was talking to you or somebody who is kind of faithful to the original one, you know, I'd get a feel for it, really. But, you know, some teenager, I'd say, check it out.
See, I would say watch the original on Netflix because it's there and it's cheap and it's free.
That's a good way to go about it, too.
I just don't like this movie. I think I don't feel like it hits any of the beats that it's supposed to. Even on just a structural story level. It's not scary where it's supposed to be scary. It's not sad where it's supposed to be sad. You don't care about the characters. The only performance I actually really did come away liking from the movie, funnily enough, was the Tommy character, the jock kid who takes her out. I know that he's like a total like CW Stepford teen, and as far as the way he looks, but I felt like he at least had some sort of, I don't know, I halfway believed his character. He was the only one that wasn't either overacting or underacting.
Oh, well, I thought he was underacting, but okay. I mean, I don't know, like I said, I knew this was going to be a mixed bag, and I was like 90% sure that you were going to hate it and that this was going to be your review, so... No, I mean, I'm not trying to offend. I'm really not, but this is what I did expect. So
I think I could have liked this movie. I mean, I think I would have appreciated this movie.
I think that
more.
There are parts. I think you were right in saying that there are parts of it they should go into more, like the YouTube, and I think that they could do more with the religious stuff that they hinted at too. I really do.
I think they could have done a lot of things. I think they, they hint at a few different angles they want to tackle, but then they don't do them. So I feel like if this movie had actually deviated more from the original, not just beat for beat, basically do the original, like some community theater version of it, like if they had done, if they had really taken it in a new direction, like honestly, as dumb and schlocky as it is, Carrie 2 The Rage is a better movie.
Okay. I haven't seen it for a long time. I can't comment on that.
It's not good, but it's better. But I think it's better than this.
Okay. I think we're maybe, for me, I guess this is conjecture, but the place that I guess I feel like this movie could, where maybe it went wrong in some of the places where we feel it went wrong, is I think specifically it was for the a director. I think sometimes it sits in a hard spot. Because they have people like you and me who are like, you can't fuck up the original. And then you have people who are like, well, it's not a true adaptation. So I could see people going both ways with that argument. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. Like I said, for me, it's a mixed bag. I think that some people might get a kick out of it. I think some obviously won't. So.
All right. Well, we'll move on now to the Netflix segment. Where we assign homework assignments every week for what we're going to review for this last bit of the show. Last week it was your turn. You had me watch Black Sunday by Mario Bava, a.k.a. The Devil's Mask.
Yes. I didn't original. Know that when I watched it. And I was like, am I watching the wrong fucking thing? Anyway.
And then it pops up, a.k.a. Yeah. The Black Sunday. Yeah, it's the original Italian title that was changed for America for probably obvious reasons. This film is not new. This came out, I believe, in the 60s. I'm looking it up as we speak. 1960, exactly. So why don't you set it up?
Okay. Basically, what this film was to me was kind of like it was a strange and magical journey. Because what you get is you get almost like a Mario Bava doing like a Universal movie, but with like a Hammer horror edge, or even like late Hammer horror edge. So you get this really strange journey with this. Basically, you get this setup about this, you know, this executed witch, and then basically what happens is these two doctors stumble upon this old castle and you get all the gothic influence into it. And basically they go in, you know, discovering and people getting taken over and different things of that nature. So again, I think that this works. This is like a lot of the Italian horror from that period. The set pieces are beautiful.
Yeah.
They get really good looking actresses. They dub over them.
everybody,
yes.
Yeah.
This one I felt like the way it was different, it was kind of like a Universal movie with weird like edges, like really sharp edges. Yeah. And I enjoyed the hell out of it, really. I was very surprised by the intro.
It's a hell of an intro.
Yeah, there's just parts of it that just stuck out because I was like, oh, this doesn't usually happen in this kind of movie. And then I'm like, wait, this isn't like one of those movies. It's different.
But, yeah.
No, I enjoyed it. I really did.
Cool. I liked it. Yeah. I do think it's a little slow for, you know, just in comparison to modern day filmmaking, which is obvious. But there's a moment kind of towards the middle between, you know, the moment that we've known that some of these evil entities are coming back to life and doing things, and you kind of at that point you kind of are waiting for them to do things. But then by the, you know, towards the third act of the movie when all of this stuff starts to culminate and you see how all of these evil plans are coming into play and you know all this crazy body taking over, almost vampirism, in a way. This has a very kind of Eastern European vampire tale kind of story to it. It's beautiful. It's kind of, you know, very, very gothic and I would say it's a little bit more surface than you know, substance, but I did enjoy it.
I don't know. I was, I guess, expecting that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the giallo horror kind of is that way to me. But
yeah.
That doesn't necessarily, I don't know, it doesn't make it bad. Again, I was more surprised by some of the violence in it and some of the, just those hard edges, like I said, like, and then just some of the stuff that happens, like, it just didn't seem, I mean, now I guess you'd snicker at it because it's not a penis being cut off or whatever, but,
No, yeah, the violence in this movie is kind of surprising when it happens because it's shot in a very traditional way.
Yes.
It looks kind of like a Universal horror movie or like an old Hammer film, but it does have those, every once in a while, you know, a moment of kind of modern gore aesthetic, even though it's a black and white film. So it is kind of a transitional film.
Yeah.
Which makes it interesting in and of itself.
Definitely. So I kind of wonder, I don't know, I didn't think, I guess I should pose this to you. Did you see anything that maybe this maybe influenced later, by chance?
Nothing off the top of my head. I mean, I think this movie is kind of a pastiche anyway.
Yes.
You know, they're obviously influenced by several different things that we've already pointed out. As well as just that kind of Italian style.
Sure.
But this kind of, you know, predates Giallo, you know, the Silver Age, if you will. Like, you know, like the Blood and Black Lace and then later with Argento and some of those films. So you see him kind of edging towards that style and what it would be. So I think that's more what's interesting about it.
Kind of how the one thing that I thought of while you were saying that is maybe slightly like the way that they kind of use Satan, or how they say Satan and kind of like how they chant it and stuff like that, actually I think is really reminiscent of Rosemary's Baby.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, I guess I just wonder, I'm like, did really famous filmmakers, did they see this film at that time and were like, oh, and it kind of like spark something in them, because there were a lot of horror films that followed. I like I said, I can't think of anything that's directly influenced, but
I thought about Norwegian black metal a lot while watching this. I was like, man, those guys probably love this movie.
sure. Well, I mean, he did do Black Sabbath too, which kind of,
yeah,
you know, I mean, come on. But no, like I said, I think that you have to be, I guess I should set this up for the review in the sense that I think that you have to be into seeing older films and kind of seeing history, because it is slower. However, I enjoyed it. So if you like some of the old Universal stuff, or, you know, you like some of the giallo horror, I think the Hammer horror, I think,
mm-hmm.
I think you can be into this pretty easily.
Well, and gothic horror in general.
Sure.
I mean, it also kind of reminded me of, some of Roger Corman's Edgar Allan Poe movies.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Some of those, like, maybe he was definitely influenced.
Probably, because he was a big connoisseur of foreign film. So,
yeah.
And if Black Sunday did have any kind of release in America in the 60s, it probably was through AIP.
Sure.
So yeah, no, it's an interesting film. It's like we were saying, it's kind of a transitional movie. It's very atmospheric. I think it's a little slow in places, and I don't think it holds my interest completely. But it is definitely a strange one.
Yes. Okay. What do you got for me next week for Netflix, Cassidy?
Next week we're going to review in our Netflix homework Joe Dante's The Hole. This is his most recent film. It was made in 2011, but didn't get a release until earlier this year, or late last year, one or the other.
Okay.
And it had a very limited release at that, but I know that this kind of goes back to kind of his horror movies through the eyes of children, maybe something like Gremlins. I don't know exactly.
Okay.
But I'm interested to see what it is.
Fair enough. Joe Dante is a good guy, so I'm excited.
All right. Well, that's our episode then, and if anybody has anything they want to say about any of the movies we talked about in this episode, Carrie, Black Sunday, or next week's The Hole, you can contact us at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also look us up on Facebook, facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there, and you can see whenever we put up new news items or articles that we may find interesting between episodes, as well as any updates about the show itself. You can also comment on anything we put there. You can go to our review archives at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com to find our RSS feed or just to play us from your computer without downloading. If you do want to, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to us there, as well as write us a little sentence, review, and maybe a star rating, a smiley face and a star rating. That would be fine. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can also read my movie column and the contributions I've done for the MacGuffin podcast out of Seattle at mcguff.in/authors/Cassidy, I believe, is how you get to it.
Go to that site, find them. You'll be fine.
And, Richard, you can find crushed to death in the auditorium of his high school.
Yeah, it happens every once in a while. That's fine.
Yeah.
Anyways, talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.